Chapter 3, A Revolution in Type 1 Diabetes. If you have type 1 diabetes, the diet changes you will soon learn about can be life-saving. No doubt you have heard that type 1 diabetes increases the risk of heart problems and other complications. When you really take control, however, all these risks plummet. Research has proven that you are not powerless to resist the complications of diabetes. There is a lot you can do to protect yourself. The Diabetes Control and Complications Trial did it with medication. The study was sponsored by the U.S. government and included 1,441 people with type 1 diabetes. Some of the participants took insulin once or twice daily, as is common practice. The remaining participants were asked to follow a more intensive program. They took insulin 3 or 4 times daily, either by injection or via an insulin pump. They checked their blood glucose several times a day and adjusted their insulin doses accordingly. Over 17 years of follow-up, the extra care these individuals took paid off dramatically. Careful tracking of blood sugar and medication adjustments lowered the risk of heart problems by 50%. Also, although people with diabetes are at risk for eye problems, careful blood glucose control reduced that risk by 76%. Compared to people on traditional medical therapy. It cut the risk of kidney problems by 39% and reduced the risk of neuropathy by 60%. The study treatment involved medication rather than diet, but it proved a vitally important point. Many people had imagined that diabetes complications are simply inevitable. This study showed otherwise. Gaining control over your blood glucose makes an enormous difference. Now, with type 1 diabetes, you will need to use insulin to achieve that goal. But diet and exercise offer additional ways that too few people take advantage of. And diet is the focus of this book. Also, it is important to understand that blood sugar control, as vital as it is just one part of the equation. Your risk of developing problems with your heart, kidneys, eyes, or extremities also depends on your blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and other factors. The goal now is to adjust your diet to control all of these to the extent that we can, adding medications as necessary according to your doctor's advice. Toward an optimal diet. In type 1 diabetes, your greatest risk is to your heart and blood vessels. If you do nothing, cardiovascular disease lies in wait. In fact, it strikes the majority of people with type 1 diabetes. We now have a better understanding than ever before about how to use diet and lifestyle changes to protect the heart, not only for people with diabetes, but for anyone. Chapters 4 and 5 will cover how and what to eat in great detail, and chapters 12 and 13 will discuss the complications head-on. In the meantime, here are the keys. A healthy diet. Follow the diet steps outlined in the next chapter. These practices eliminate cholesterol and animal fat, keep fats in general very low, and guide you away from sugar and refined carbohydrates and toward healthy, complex carbohydrates. As you will see, there is a special advantage to a vegetarian diet, or I should say a vegan diet, meaning a menu that includes no animal products at all. Dietary cholesterol is found only in animal products. It is a good idea to eliminate cholesterol from your diet completely. There is no good cholesterol in foods. Rather, cholesterol in foods always tends to increase your blood cholesterol level. This is in contrast to cholesterol that is measured by blood tests, which doctors separate into good, HDL cholesterol, and bad, LDL cholesterol, among other forms. HDL cholesterol is good because it is leaving the body. Animal foods also tend to be high in the saturated bad fats that tend to cause your body to make additional cholesterol. A vegetarian diet eliminates these problems. It has another major benefit as well. It derives all its protein from plants rather than from animal products. Research studies have shown that among people with any degree of kidney damage, animal protein increases the risk of further kidney deterioration. On the other hand, healthy beans, grains, and vegetables are just what your kidneys ordered. Please listen to the next chapters very carefully. They will show you how to begin. No smoking. If you smoke, now's the time to stop. If you have tried 50 times, it's time for try number 51. You can and will succeed. Ask your doctor to help you. Regular exercise. Even modest exercise, such as daily walking, makes a big difference. See your doctor, who will assess your heart, your joints, and your overall health to make sure you are ready for exercise. See Chapter 11 for ways to get started. Stress management. Stress affects your health directly, causing fight or flight hormones to flood into your bloodstream. In turn, these hormones typically raise your blood sugar. Stress also disrupts your eating routines and interferes with sleep. Getting a handle on stress does not mean stepping back from the challenges of life. It means finding ways to enjoy life fully without letting stress get out of control. There are many healthy ways to relax, including meditation, yoga, and even simple breathing exercises. As you learned in the previous chapter, Dr. Dean Ornish showed that these four steps, a healthy vegetarian diet, smoking cessation, regular exercise, and stress management, can actually reverse heart disease, even without the use of cholesterol-lowering medications. That is a tremendous benefit. Your doctor may add medications to your regimen to protect you further. These lifestyle changes will not eliminate the need to use insulin for type 1 diabetes, but they can help you stay healthy, minimizing the effects of diabetes on your life. A new understanding of the causes of type 1 diabetes. Let's think for a moment beyond improving the health of people with type 1 diabetes. What if we could actually prevent it in the first place? Research over the past two decades suggests that we may already have the ability to prevent many cases of type 1 diabetes. If you thought the disease was simply genetic and there was no way to stop it, listen. Studies of identical twins have set that notion aside. Identical twins, of course, have exactly the same genes, so they have the same hair color, eye color, and facial features. If a disease were simply genetic, then both twins would have it. But type 1 diabetes does not work that way. As I mentioned in Chapter 1, if one twin has diabetes, the other has less than a 40% chance of developing it. Thus, although genes play a role, it is clear that type 1 diabetes is not simply a genetic disease. Something else triggers it, something in the child's early environment. For many years, researchers have known that type 1 diabetes occurs when the immune system attacks and destroys the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. Your immune system, of course, is your defense against viruses, bacteria, and cancer cells. It is not supposed to attack your own healthy body tissues, but that is exactly what occurs in type 1 diabetes. To understand why this happens, let's look at a few basics. The complex defense network of your immune system is made up of specialized white blood cells. Some of these cells engulf invading germs and digest them. Others make antibodies, molecules that attach to invading organisms like harpoons, and identify them for other immune cells to attack. If you have type 1 diabetes, your immune system has made a major error. It has attacked and destroyed your insulin-producing cells, making it what scientists call an autoimmune disease. Why does it occur? Back in 1992, a team of Canadian and Finnish researchers reported an important discovery in the New England Journal of Medicine. Examining blood samples from 142 children newly diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, they found that each of the children had antibodies that were primed to attack cow's milk proteins. These antibodies had apparently arisen in response to cow proteins in their infant formula. But the antibodies were also capable of attacking the body's insulin-producing cells. It turned out that a portion of the cow's milk protein was biochemically an exact match for a portion of human insulin-producing cells. The antibodies that arose to destroy the cow's milk protein ended up attacking the children's insulin-producing cells. The pancreatic cells were destroyed by friendly fire. This study and others suggested a scenario that could lead to type 1 diabetes. when a very young infant is fed cow's milk formula, some of the milk proteins pass from the digestive tract into the bloodstream. The infant's immune system recognizes these bovine proteins as foreign and forms antibodies to attack them. Unfortunately, these antibodies attack not only the cow proteins, but also the insulin-producing cells of the pancreas. This destructive process is gradual. When nearly all of the insulin-producing cells are gone, type 1 diabetes results. The researchers believed that the mature digestive tracts of adults would not allow these dairy proteins to pass through the intestinal wall and into the bloodstream, but in infants, the molecules pass through more easily. The study suggested that one way to prevent type 1 diabetes, at least for many children, might be to avoid exposure to cow's milk early in life. Needless to say, in the early 1990s, neither parents nor pediatricians had any idea about this. Cow's milk formulas were routinely fed to infants, and they still are. When children are not breastfed, some sort of formula has to be used. And while some children are given soy formulas that would presumably pose no diabetes risk, many are given cow's milk varieties. In 1992, when the New England Journal of Medicine report emerged, the well-known baby doctor, Benjamin Spock, MD, and I held a press conference. We were joined by Frank Oeske, MD, Director of Pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University, and other nutrition experts. We recommended that parents be given information about the potential risks of early exposure to cow's milk. After all, parents are pushed very hard to give milk to their children, but they rarely hear of potential risks it might pose. We called for an end to recommendations that push milk consumption on children and said that parents should have good information in order to decide what to feed their children. The event proved controversial. Most major newspapers and broadcast channels covered the story. The American Medical Association, AMA, sharply criticized Dr. Spock and me for casting doubt on the healthfulness of dairy products. Research teams trying to replicate these findings got mixed results, with some coming up empty-handed. Still other researchers pointed out that finding the antibodies required special techniques without which the antibodies would remain elusive. Eventually, the American Academy of Pediatrics convened a work group to look into the matter. 2 years later, in 1994, the group issued a report. Based on more than 90 studies, the group agreed that indeed, the risk of diabetes can very likely be reduced if infants are not exposed to cow's milk proteins early in life. Eventually, the AMA withdrew its objections. While Dr. Spock and I felt there was already substantial evidence and good reason to issue cautions about exposure to dairy products early in life, the controversy did not end there. There was only one way to know whether dairy proteins could actually incite the series of events leading to type 1 diabetes. The theory had to be put to the test. A European team began that process. Testing the dairy diabetes theory. In a pilot study, researchers in Finland, Sweden, and Estonia identified 242 newborns at risk for developing type 1 diabetes. Each had a first-degree relative with the condition. The researchers then encouraged their mothers to breastfeed. When mothers were ready to wean their infants, the researchers asked half to use a specially modified baby formula in which dairy proteins were broken up into individual amino acids, protein building blocks that are too small to elicit an immune reaction. The other families were allowed to use a regular cow's milk formula. The research aimed to see whether avoiding exposure to intact cow's milk proteins could reduce the likelihood of developing diabetes. As the years went by, the researchers found that the children who were fed the special formula were much less likely to develop the dangerous antibodies. In fact, the risk of developing antibodies to their insulin-producing cells was cut by 62%. The study was small, only a pilot trial, but it did follow most of the children through their first 6 to 8 years of life. During those years, several children developed diabetes. Of those receiving unmodified formula, 8 developed the disease, and in the modified formula group, 5 developed it. As it turned out, 2 of those 5 had dropped out of the study right at the start and never actually received the modified formula. That meant that only 3 children in the modified formula group developed diabetes compared to 8 in the regular formula group. The study suggested that the cow's milk theory may well be part of the puzzle, but it was too small to be definitive. And the research team began a much larger test in 2002 involving families in 15 countries. There were some limitations to this pilot study. First, it restricted dairy consumption only during the first several months of life. It is not clear whether later exposure, say at 8 or 9 months of age, might put some children at risk as well. After all, it has long been known that very large dairy protein molecules can sometimes pass from the digestive tract into the bloodstream, even in adults. The study did not address whether exposure to dairy proteins could trigger type 1 diabetes in children who are beyond early infancy. Second, the study did not ask breastfeeding mothers to avoid cow's milk in their own diets. Many breastfeeding women noticed that their children are sometimes affected by what they, the mothers, have eaten. Specifically, if a mother eats certain foods, her baby becomes colicky, crying inconsolably, as if suffering from a terrible stomach ache. One of the leading suspect foods is dairy products. When breastfeeding women avoid consuming dairy products, their babies often improve. For some women and their babies, it makes an enormous difference. In 1991, researchers found that some cow's milk proteins ingested by a nursing mother ended up in her breast milk. They came from her digestive tract, were absorbed into her bloodstream, and found their way into the breast milk. Thus, in order to avoid exposing babies to dairy proteins, it is important to eliminate them not only from infants' diets, but also from the diets of their breastfeeding mothers. One last caution about this study. It did not actually exclude dairy products from the children's diets. Rather, it used a milk product treated to break up the dairy proteins. If anything in milk other than these proteins contributes to the problem, this study would not have been able to detect it. Even so, it was an important step in coming to understand how parts of an infant's diet may lead to diabetes. The study illuminated other contributors to diabetes too. Prior evidence had suggested that viral infections may play a role, and indeed, viruses appear to have done so for some infants in the milk study. Specifically, viruses seem to stimulate immune cells, perhaps making them more active against cow's milk proteins than they would normally be. Or cow's milk proteins may influence the course of viral infections in some way. The idea is that the interplay between cow's milk formula and viruses may put babies at increased risk. No one knows what the research on milk and type 1 diabetes will ultimately show. If the theory turns out to be correct, it suggests that avoiding cow's milk products, at least during the first several months of life, could greatly reduce the likelihood of developing this disease. Needless to say, breastfeeding instead of feeding formula poses no risks for children. Quite the opposite. Breastfed babies gain many advantages, including better overall health and even a few extra IQ points compared to their formula-fed counterparts. And the most healthful breastfeeding is done when mothers follow a diet free of foods that can harm their babies. Other risk factors for diabetes may yet emerge in research studies, and for children who are already in the midst of an antibody attack, researchers are studying means of intervening to try to stop the destruction of their insulin-producing cells. Staying healthy. If we are able to prevent diabetes, we will have a very powerful tool at our disposal. For people who already have type 1 diabetes, there are effective steps they can take to help them stay healthy. Keeping blood glucose under control is essential, and stabilizing cholesterol levels and blood pressure protects the heart and blood vessels. The same sort of diet that is described in this book for type 2 diabetes is likely to be enormously beneficial for people with type 1 as well.